Welcome to the Rewilded Human Podcast, where Dr. Lucille and Lynn will tackle your most difficult and intimate questions with candor, tough love, and a little dash of humor. In today's episode...
So how many times are we carrying these scars that don't actually exist? So a lot of times the perception of other people, you know, you're almost expecting these people not to love you and not to accept you because they love the previous wife so much. So you're already going in with this shield up that's kind of protecting yourself because you know they're going to hate you. Mm-hmm. So I think trying to get rid of that mm-hmm. and be yourself, like 100% yes. yourself. So welcome to episode 3. How exciting.
Yeah, so let's start with Rosemary. Yes. Her question is, my friends are putting pressure on me to pick a side in the current conflict, but I'm uncomfortable and unsure. How do I form an opinion?
Wow.
You know, I think that's a great question in this time because of all the recent turbulence. You know, we all know what we're talking about here. There is a tremendous amount of pressure for people to declare which side they're loyal to. And I personally question that whole thing. I do not see that as being in any way of any value to humanity on this planet. I do not.
No.
And I think that what it does is it just supports more conflict. You know, people get very militant about their side and how, you know, they get righteously entitled to keep forcing their opinion on other people and, you know, trying to weed out who's with me, who's not with me. Like, there's a horrific war. There are so many horrific wars in this world. Why do we have to bring it all home and do it to one another on an interpersonal level? Mm-hmm. And I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and we both, interestingly, had the same vision that this reminds us of, you know, ancient Roman times when people would go to the Colosseum and they would, you know, they would back their favorite gladiator. And what they were watching was the most brutal, horrific slaughter of life. How can you, you know, support that? It's horrendous. I have tremendous, tremendous empathy for everybody who's suffering in any conflict in the world. But I'm here to support humanity. That's
humanity. Exactly. Not the politicians and not the powers that be and not the people at the top pulling the strings for whom human lives are just disposable. We're like cockroaches to them, so it doesn't matter. So, you know, anytime we take sides, we are just playing into their hands, yeah. right? Because yeah. that's what they did with the past 3 years, with which we don't want to mention what it was. Everybody knows what we're talking about. That divided us so much already, right? Then politics divide us further. Then mm-hmm. religion divides us further. And now we need war, and you need to take a stand because we're not divided enough. We need to be divided even further, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like families are killing each other and people are getting divorced because they are taken. It's insanity. We need to unite, we need to pull together, we need to against the evildoers that are doing this to us, not the innocent people that are getting killed on both sides, right?
Yes, absolutely. I agree. I think you've made a really excellent point here that when you get into the divisions, this is something that's orchestrated at a higher level. This is, you know, if you want to call it shadow government or whatever. Divide and conquer. And we, no matter which side we pick, we are always the losers in this. And so, you know, Rosemary, I would heartily support you in not taking one side or another if you feel uncomfortable. I can't tell you what to do. Maybe as you research things, you decide that you do want to support one side or another. But don't allow people to tell you what your choices are or should be. Never allow that. Don't give up your ability to think independently to anybody. You'll be able to sleep better, even if your friends are angry at you. You know, you'll at least be able to sleep better with a clear conscience if you follow your own wisdom in your own heart and you're not adding to the conflict on this planet.
Absolutely. And you know, how do you even pick sides when everything they put on the media tells us everything is a lie, everything they show us, everything they tell? How can you even use your judgment to make a call? It's absolutely impossible. So I think the best and the kindest thing you can do for humanity and for yourself and for your friends is not to take sides. And hopefully you have friends, Rosemary, who can respect that and respect that about you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Wise words.
Wise words. Mm-hmm. So the next one comes from Donna. Donna asks, my partner has ADD. How do I get him to go for treatment? Lucille, would you like to take this one?
I see so many people either with ADD in my practice or spouses of people with ADD. Mm-hmm. And when I first started out in my practice that's 35 years ago, I hardly ever saw anybody with ADD or married to someone with ADD. It's so interesting. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's just that because the medical profession was kind of a bit slow on picking up on this. It does exist. I know there's controversy. People say it doesn't exist. It's just, a diagnosis that serves the pharmaceutical companies. But in actual fact, ADD is a bona fide mental condition. And mm-hmm. how do we know? It's because if you do SPECT scans of the brain, mm-hmm. you see a certain profile of imbalances that are common to everybody who presents with certain symptoms that we now label ADD. It's a really extremely challenging condition to live with or to be living with somebody who has that condition. Mm-hmm. Because your prefrontal cortex, the part of your brain that governs executive functioning, is AWOL. Most of the time, it's just not there. It is a little bit like if you've got a child, a very young child, whose prefrontal cortexes, cortices do not develop, do not mature until maybe mid-20s. It's kind of like dealing with a child who's constantly distracted and they run after this and then they run after that. And, oh, yeah, you told them to put their shoes on because they've got to go to school. And they sort of remember that. But, oh, but there's this video game. And, and so it can be.
You can't focus.
It's total lack of focus, difficulty planning, difficulty strategizing, difficulty organizing your space and your time, having no impulse control. You'll blurt things out.
I know someone like that. Yes.
And so there are a number of different behaviors and symptoms. Anybody can look them up. And that's one thing I suggest for people like you is to really, if you haven't already done so, research ADD. And one of the best resources I found is Amen Clinics, A-M-E-N.
I love him.
Clinics, yes. And they also have their own podcast. They've got a wonderful website and they have questionnaires that you can self-administer to determine if you do have ADD. So I would say use that. A number of my clients who are living with people with ADD have found it to be very, very valuable resource. You love these people. I get it. But it is very, very difficult and challenging to deal with them.
Have you found, like, especially in children, that certain food colorings, certain foods, make the situation much worse?
Yeah, and I don't work directly with children, but I have, parents who have noticed that, and they are very clear that there are certain triggers, including, food colorings or certain foods or just sugars. Sugar.
Yeah, sugar, definitely. So perhaps also in adults, cleaning up the diet.
Yes. However, the issue is when you've got a child, you have some control over what the child eats. When you're an adult. you can't necessarily control what your partner is eating. And I found even with the ADD partners, they know something's wrong. They're really frustrated with the condition themselves and they do want to get help. Even they have trouble, even if you can get them to go to a clinic to get assessed and treated, they have great difficulty following through. Mm-hmm. They will fall off the wagon so many times. And then there are those, and I think it's the majority of people with ADD who are in total denial that they have it, and they see it as almost like an insult, you know, for anybody to suggest that they have a condition that they need treatment for. So I don't know where your partner is on that scale, but I would say be very, very, very realistic that it's not that easy. It can be very challenging. Even if they agree to go for treatment, the treatment may not last because non-compliance is a huge issue with people with ADD. It's kind of like,
what is the treatment like other than medication, pharmaceuticals? Are there other options for?
Oh, sure. There are. In fact, you know, lifestyle changes are always, and I think they should be the first things that should be instituted. So things like as you said, you clean up the diet, you make sure there's nothing that is in the diet that triggers ADD symptoms. Mm-hmm. Intense aerobic exercise is also very good. It has to be done daily. Things like good sleep hygiene, you know, the stuff that, you know, you would say to anybody. There are certain supplements that are highly beneficial for the ADD brain. So you would introduce those as well. And again, Amen Clinics has a whole list of stuff that can be done. The issue is, and I know, Lynn, you are a fantastically disciplined person. You take on a protocol and you do it to the nth degree. But with the ADD person, they fall off the wagon so easily on their self-care.
Yes.
So if you're a partner of somebody like this and you are determined that you want to help them and you want to stay in the relationship, you have to be on top of them all the time. You are like a coach or a drill sergeant, and not in a negative way. You have to be so patient and so non-judgmental, because judgment or harshness or being punitive actually makes the ADD person worse. So
that's a tough one.
It is a tough one. It is really. And you know, unfortunately, I don't want to rain on anybody's parade, but if you're having a hard time with an ADD spouse, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. It is the challenge of the condition. And also, there are different subtypes of ADD. Some people with ADD have a milder form or a different, slightly different subtype, so they're not as challenging to live with. But then there are others that are just, oh my goodness, horrendous. I mean, I have a guy in my practice, really lovely person, who was struggling with it for so many years, and his wife finally said, listen, I cannot deal with this any longer. And he failed psychotherapy and the treatment that I was giving him, you know, once I had to really fire him because it just wasn't working. There wasn't anything more I could do. But when his wife gave him the ultimatum, he went to, I think he's now got four or five other healthcare practitioners along with me. And because she has the resources to pay for this, he did get traction and he did start getting better and better. Okay. But it requires a tremendous amount of input of resources, time, and energy. Tremendous.
But there's hope. So there's hope, Donna. And, you know, you just have to convince him, maybe take the test on Dr. Amen's website to determine where he is on the spectrum, right? And try to get him, you know, to understand that for the relationship to move forward and for them to be happy, that he needs to address this, because it's a very, very difficult thing to live with for the partner.
Yes.
So, Donna, we feel your pain.
And please do take care of yourself, Donna, in all of this, because it can be so draining. It's so draining. So do take care of yourself.
Absolutely. So the next question, Lucille, is yours.
It's from Suzanne. I'm getting married and I'm very nervous that my fiance's friends will reject me because they were all friends of his wife who passed on. What do I do? You know, I think there's so many people in this position far more than we realize, because there's so many breakups of marriages and then reconnections, meet somebody else, you get married. And like the question of blended families, you have to blend with the other person's tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And the key element I always find is, how strong is your relationship with your about to be spouse?
Mm-hmm.
If the two of you are very strongly committed and you are in a very highly trusting relationship, then nobody can get in between that.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I see is that people get very insecure because they have not dealt with their own unresolved self-esteem issues. You know, if they have had issues throughout their childhood of being put down, constantly rejected, bullied, whatever, you know, people will bring that into every new relationship. And so there it is again, a need to really look at your background and ask yourself, is there something that I can do about my own insecurity?
Yes.
So that it does not get in the way and I'm not constantly fearing rejection from other people. You know, you either go into therapy or you do your work on yourself, you do your journaling, your self-reflection, etc. But, you know, again, it's the strength of your relationship with your about to be spouse and your own self-esteem that are two key issues in this. So what would you have to say about
that? Just a story popped into my mind. It's something that I shared on Instagram a few weeks ago. I don't know if you remember this, but they did this experiment. So these women were going in for job interviews. And before the job interview, they painted fake scars on their faces.
Oh, I remember this post, yes.
And then they said, oh, we're just going to touch up the scars before you go in for the job interview. But they actually removed the scars. But the women went in thinking that their face is all scarred. And they all came out and they're like, oh, I experienced so much discrimination and they treated me horribly and everything, because they thought the scars were still on their faces, but they weren't. So how many times are we carrying these scars that don't actually exist? So a lot of times the perception of other people, you know, you're almost expecting these people not to love you and not to accept you because they love the previous wife so much. So you already going in with this shield up that's kind of protecting yourself because you know they're going to hate you. Mm-hmm. So I think trying to get rid of that, mm-hmm. and be yourself, like 100%
yes.
yourself.
Yes.
And show these people how much you love your significant other, how devoted you are to him or to her. And I think people can really pick up on that. And if they see that the person is happy and you bring good things into his life and you're a good person, good balanced, grounded person, then they can't help but love you.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep.
And just get rid of all the negativity and everything that you think these people will be feeling, and just open your heart and let them in.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That would be my two cents. So I just thought this story
Excellent.
Could tie in nicely.
Yes,
it.
Yes, it's a great story, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the next question we have from Linda. I'm always worried and anxious. It drives me nuts when people tell me to get grounded or raise my vibe. What does that even mean? That's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Linda. I do appreciate that, because I can see, you know, some people get so far into the whole new age and I'm so positive and my vibe and this and this. And a lot of times those people have issues as well, what I've seen. And, you know, it's so easy to tell someone, oh, just raise your vibration. And, you know, and of course, it's a bit condescending, right? Because it doesn't actually just work like that. And especially if you have anxiety and maybe you're, you know, going through changes, maybe you're going through menopause that brings a lot of anxiety into your life, or if you're the type of person that worries a lot naturally, you can't just shut that down and turn it off, right? No matter how much you meditate or how much kumbaya or anything else that you do, it goes a lot deeper than that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Lucille?
You know, I really agree. The one thing that is important is that people will you very quickly and easily give glib advice, as you just said, you know. Yeah, it's not that easy. It's just not that easy to raise your vibe or to get grounded. And because if you've been chronically anxious and you've never experienced that really, you have no idea what that is.
Yeah.
And so I would suggest that you realize that the people giving you this advice, they may be meaning well, but they have no idea what they're talking about. It's not like people don't have anxiety. Lots of people have anxiety, but they'll deal with it in very different ways. And then they think that, well, it worked for me, then it's going to work for you, you know? And so for chronic anxiety, it is, again, important to remember that it's complicated. It can be complicated. And in order to deal effectively with something like a chronic condition like that, you have to be a little bit like a detective, and you have to research, you have to look into your own past. How did I get this way? What happened to me? When did it start, etc.? And you look, of course, for solutions, but again, it's, you have to be very, very patient. You know, there are some big celebrities, like, you know, social media influencers, etc., like, well, Mel Robbins is a great,
she's fantastic,
who has had chronic anxiety for so long, and she's constantly coming up with advice and strategies, but she's never making it like simple, like you do just this one thing and everything will be fine. So sometimes it may just start with learning some basic breathing techniques to just get yourself maybe a little bit notch down to a slightly more and more calm level. You may try meditation. You try anything really that does even a little bit to calm you down, and you celebrate every time you find a strategy that gets you there. But for chronic anxiety, you have to look at things like, again, lifestyle, like
caffeine. Number one, for me, I used to have terrible anxiety, and it was caused by the 1 to 2 cups of coffee I was having. You know, I was to the point, I would wake up in the morning, have my coffee, and by the time I was putting on my makeup, my hands were shaking like this.
Yes.
And you don't realize what coffee and caffeine does to your body until you stop. And then you start having it again. And then you realize what it's actually doing to you. So I see a lot of people that are suffering with chronic anxiety, and caffeine is a huge trigger. And, you know, when I tell people to stop drinking coffee, you know, it's such a major drug that people will, like, I would rather die than stop drinking coffee. And they mean it, you know, if I have to stop drinking, I would rather die. So how crazy is that? When it can be such a huge, huge issue with people, especially with, you know, if you are worried all the time and suffer from anxiety, stop drinking coffee. That's my number one tip. And
caffeine, you have to look at caffeine in every other beverage.
Everything, of course, all the energy drinks, a lot of the medications, weight loss pills, even chocolate has caffeine in it. So if you eat a lot of chocolate, then definitely. So you really have to pay attention to those things. I would switch to decaf or herbal teas, even better. But that would go a long way to reducing anxiety. And my favorite herb is ashwagandha. You know, for anxiety, for menopausal women as well, ashwagandha just, you know, really helps to, and anytime we make any kind of recommendations for supplements or anything like that, please check with your healthcare provider.
Absolutely.
You know, that's really important, because it could interact with some medication or something else that you're taking. But I know from my own personal experience, ashwagandha just really helps to balance and to keep you grounded, helps with sleep as well, and just kind of gets that, you know, that constant worry and anxiety that you have going on in your head just kind of calms everything down. So B vitamins can also be helpful, you know, for the whole nervous system. But, you know, but I Linda wasn't really asking us how to overcome this, but what?
That's correct. And I would just say, you know what, you will come to your own conclusions and find your own strategies, and stop feeling like, if you're feeling like you're somehow defective because you can't just do what your friends are telling you to do, I would say, please take that pressure off yourself and just know that your experience is your experience, and you're the best person really to find your way to that place of calm. And it's not necessarily going to be easy, but you can get there for sure. Absolutely. No question.
And it's not about, I think it's not about forcing to raise your vibration. I think when you're doing the right things and you nourish your body the right way,
yeah, your vibration will rise.
Your vibration rises naturally. I don't think it's something that should be forced. Like, here, do these steps so you can raise your vibration and you'll be on this, you know. And when you do raise your vibration, you have to keep in mind that you're not going to be constantly on this high level. It's impossible to stay like that. Life is a roller coaster. And even throughout the day, you're going to have ups and downs and everything. And that's completely normal. And when you see someone that's always la, 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 you know, that something's wrong there too, because that's not normal to be constantly in a manic state, right?
Yes.
So if, you know, we are human beings and we have ups and downs, and this is completely normal. And I think we have to kind of accept that and live as healthy as we can, and to let our vibration
just naturally, it will naturally, as you say, naturally it will rise the healthier.
And also, Linda, this is so important. Surround yourself with people that actually help raise your vibration. Because if you have people around you that are bringing you down, then it's going to be very difficult to reach that state.
Right. Yes. Okay. So shall we move on to the next one?
Let's move on to the next one.
And this comes from Julia. Thank you very much for this question. I think we've all been here. How do I deal with a friend who's always complaining about the same problem with her boyfriend, but she won't try anything to change it? Oh, I so feel for you.
If I had a penny for every time I've dealt with something like this. Yeah.
And absolutely. You know what? Full confession here. I'm probably, when I was a teenager, I did the same thing, because I was in a group of, you know, girls where all we did was complain about our boyfriends, right? And we didn't do anything effective. That was our way of bonding when we got together. But, you know, as you get older, that gets very, very stale and very draining. And like, talk about lowering your vibe. Yes. That can do it for sure. And so people can get addicted to complaining. Mm-hmm. This is the thing that is true, that, you know, and some of the things that can hook them are sympathy, you know, that gentle soothing from the friend. They're there, dear. I know he is such a, you know what, and you're just, I don't know how you stand it. It's so awful. So that can be addictive in and of itself. And you have to watch that. If you find that you're doing that with a friend, you're constantly giving them soothing and nurturing, and they keep taking and taking and taking, but it has no traction in their lives. It's just like they just want to keep drinking it in more and more, getting all that soothing from you. And meanwhile, you're getting drained and you are wanting to avoid the next contact with this person. Then it is time to, you know, start taking courage in your hands and being honest. You know, first you're honest with yourself and you say, listen, how much am I really getting out of this friendship for me to keep tolerating it? Do I really want to keep tolerating this? And if the answer is no, and at some point it usually will be, because this just goes nowhere usually, like keeps driving you into a hole. When you're ready, then you will have to make a decision about how to set limits. And a lot of people are saying, and I agree thoroughly, that the first limit has to be on yourself. When you draw a boundary, it has to be on yourself. It's about no more. If I meet this person and she starts in, I have to tell myself, I am not engaging. I'm not going there. I'm not going to let her drive me into a hole. I will not allow myself to be taken down. That's the first thing. And you have to be very, very firm with yourself.
Yes.
And the second thing is, then you start figuring out what you say to that person, realizing that there is no perfect way of saying this, that most people would get very offended or hurt if you stop them from laying their problems at your doorstep. They would get very, very hurt.
Lucille, what if you stop them and you would say, okay, well, tell me something really great. Tell me something you
that's
love
right.
about
people. I have done that. And I've had clients who've done that. And you know what happens? They'll do it for like 10 seconds and then they'll be back to complaining about Right. I don't know. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, it's true. And they don't, you know, you give them the advice and everything, but they don't want to change anything. It's really just about complaining, just about being heard and getting attention pretty much.
That's
right.
Right. Yes. And it's not the job, it's not the job of you, Julia, to figure out why they're in this pattern. It's not your job. Don't try to figure it out yourself or try to get them to figure it out. It's more about you just set the limit.
Yeah,
you know, why they're still there is really none of your business, and that drives you down another rabbit hole if you even try going there, you know. Mm-hmm. So then you start practicing phrases in the privacy of your bathroom to the mirror. Certain phrases that you're going to use the next time you're with that person that will, you know, hopefully give them a sense that they really cannot go any further with you, but in a respectful, you're going to deliver it in a respectful way.
Yeah.
You know, and it can be something like, you know, we've been good friends for a long time. I am really concerned about you because you talk so much about your unhappiness with this boyfriend. And it seems as if there is no way out as far as you can see. And I am not a health professional, and I don't see that my just sitting here and listening to you is going to be helpful for you.
Yeah. And, you know, it can also get a little bit, I had a friend when we lived in Florida a long time ago, and she was the same way. She was constantly complaining about her husband, constantly. And I would listen to her. We were exercising together and everything. But as I was listening, I would start chiming in. Oh, my husband does that as well. Oh, my husband's like that. And I realized that you can get caught up in this.
You can get caught up.
And then all of a sudden you're going home and fighting with your husband.
Exactly.
Because, you know, she's pointing out all these things I didn't even notice. Oh, my husband does that as well. And right. I needed to cut the friendship. I needed to cut her
yes.
loose because
yeah.
I realized it's going to ruin my marriage. Because
that's
when
right.
I go home, I try to focus on the good things with my husband.
Yeah.
So I don't need someone bringing all these things to my attention that are actual issues that are, you know what I'm saying?
So absolutely, it gets contagious.
Contagious. And people get stuck in this rut, and especially with friends, and it's like they just get together and we just complain and complain and complain. And what kind of a friendship is that? You know, like I understand we do need to discuss things, and as women, you know, it's important to have those kind of communications. And we do get closer to our friends through, you know, engaging in these kinds of conversations. But with someone that's always just complaining and never has anything good to say, I don't know. I don't know how, I just can't do those people anymore.
I certainly can't either. You go down with the ship if you stay
exactly.
with them.
Yeah. Exactly. So
absolutely.
That's,
yeah.
So Julia, we wish you well with your friend and hopefully you can snap her out of this and make her realize that this is, you know, this is not the way to nurture your friendship. And it's probably really bad for her relationship as well, because she's always just focusing on the negative, and they need a complete change of their mindset.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Yeah.
So that brings us to the end of episode 3. Thank you so much, Lucille, for all your insight. And thank you guys all for all the questions that you sent in, and keep sending them in, because we look forward to answering more of your questions in episode 4.
Thank you, everybody. And thanks.
Thank you, everybody. Man. Have a great day.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Please be aware that Lynn and I are here to provide insights, advice, stories that are for educational and entertainment purposes only. None of our content should be considered to be personal, medical, or mental health therapy. If you are experiencing a mental health or physical health challenge, please consult the appropriate healthcare specialist. We are here to provide the best possible content in an atmosphere of positive conversation and personal growth.